Okay, so here's a bit of a tough one, guys. So strap yourself in and make of it what you will. But next time when you're thinking about antidepressants or someone close to you that is using them, think about being anti-fragile. Okay, so what is it to be anti-fragile? I know we've defined this many, many times. But just for the sake of becoming redundant, the anti-fragile improves from disorder. Anti-fragility gains from pain. What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Anti-fragility improves from disorder. If you were sending a package overseas, you might put fragile on the box. That means everyone's got to treat it very carefully, because if you don't treat it carefully, whatever's inside is going to break. Nassim Taleb makes the funny point that if you were to send a package abroad that was anti-fragile, you would write on it, handle without care. Because the more it gets bumped around, the better it's going to become. So anti-fragility welcomes disorder, it welcomes strain, and it welcomes depression, because it is through the troughs that we can justify the peaks. There isn't massive highs without massive lows. There is no happy without sad, no nourishment without hunger, no triumph without pain. Life is a duality between inexorable opposites, happy and sad, good and evil, yin and yang. As this is going to go into, I argue that antidepressants chemically level you out, and therefore you don't experience the spectrum that is necessary should you become antifragile, should you improve from disorder, should you realize whatever your potential is. The antifragile person improves from disorder again and again through iteration. There is no stagnation, no settling point of robustness. Taleb makes the point that antidepressants make you fragile, and I must say that I agree with him. And just for the sake of ethos, pathos, logos, it goes against my intuition, but as Aristotle pointed out so many years ago, an emotional appeal, the pathos, goes a very long way if you were trying to make a point. So with this in mind, I will throughout this audio briefly make anecdotal reference to my various interactions with antidepressants over the years. So what is the purpose of antidepressants? Okay, let's just start there. They're administered to level out a person's emotional impulses while they are being treated through CBT or some other psychiatric means. Okay, so if you have a depression or anxiety or some sort of complex and you are seeing someone psychologically, the antidepressants work to level you out to make that process more efficient. Not only to make it more efficient, but to make it more manageable. Okay, so they're prescribed antidepressants to make therapy efficient and manageable, which does make total sense because therapy is expensive, it's very time consuming, and it's extremely invasive. So if you are presented with a depression or an anxiety and it is so severe that it requires professional psychiatric help, then why not try and fix the issue as quickly and as efficiently as possible? So this is the justification for antidepressants and how they became just so prevalent. Because imagine if you are just another person who doesn't have access to buckets of wealth and bottomless pits of money. Getting psychiatric help is extremely expensive. So most people can't do it. So if you are a loving parent but you don't have much money and your little child is suffering, you are going to say to yourself, let's fix this. No matter the cost, we're going to fix this. Okay, and then you're told, all right, give me 6 months, be on the antidepressants, come in here once a week, and we're going to get to the bottom of this and you're going to come out a better person. That's the hope at least, but this is how antidepressants just weaned their way, their toxic little chemical tentacles, into being a commonly prescribed drug. But let's think about antifragile, okay? So what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, improve from disorder. To become antifragile, you want to constantly invite struggle and difficulty into your life. Okay, it's nothing too wild, but enough that you can manage. So over time, your ability to deal with adversity will steadily increase on a linear trajectory. Okay, so I've spoken about that before, but just think about a line graph. Very simple, say 45 degree increase, okay? This is you becoming stronger over time, and those increases are coming from the fact that you keep overcoming smaller and smaller adversities, or I should say bigger and bigger, but in very small steps. This is you becoming more anti-fragile. So every time you tackle another tough project and you're juggling your family, your work, and your ambition, you succeed. You struggled, but now you are better. And then every time you shave 5 seconds off your per kilometer runtime or add 5 kilograms to your bench press, you are steadily increasing your adversity and becoming stronger and stronger. This is the very essence of anti-fragile. But what is the key consideration throughout all of this? Now, this is very important to make because there is a place for antidepressants. I'm not saying they should be gone. Now, this is very important. It's about never exceeding your stressor threshold. Small to medium stresses will improve your life steadily over time. But what if you take on a project that is wildly outside of your level of competency, and then you're also trying to juggle the home life and your ambition? You will surely fail, and this knock will step you backwards. If you try to add 50 kilograms rather than 5 kilograms to your next bench press, you will surely fail. So antifragility, we're talking about steady increments, always improving over time. But what about antidepressants? So I said there is a place for them. I would say that they should not be administered unless self-harm has been threatened. So this is the stressor threshold. Okay, so me, as a psychiatrist, as a doctor, I should only ever prescribe such a powerfully destructive drug if the other end of my equation is worse, which is self-harm. So intervention is justified by the threat of self-harm. But it's not justified by the other argument, which is it makes therapy easier and more manageable and more efficient. And yes, I hear what you're saying. So I do hear what you're saying. So just allow me to caveat. You never know with self-harm. Most people are not going to announce their intentions before they do it. That is 100% true. And this now, if we try to talk about this point further, it will enter into an extraordinarily nuanced and contextual debate, one which I certainly don't want to impose my opinion onto. Okay, so I do hear you. Issues of mental health should always be dealt with at the individual level, at a contextual level. There is no sweeping statements for this. But I'm just trying to understand antidepressants through the prism of antifragility. And I hope you guys can stick along with me and think about it as well. Because what I'm offering here is a framework to think about antidepressants through. Whether you take them, or your mother takes them, or your brother takes them, or your best friend takes them, think about their addiction at the worst end, but also reliance at the more common end of antidepressants and how this inhibits their ability to become more antifragile. So if your threshold for disorder is that someone is threatening or capable of self-harm, then extreme intervention is needed. Because let's be clear, antidepressants are extreme intervention. They have horrendous downsides, sickening downsides. Someone very close to me, and he would never listen to this, but I'll also keep it very vague for his benefit. He was first administered antidepressants when he was 16 years old. He had ADHD, his parents were getting divorced, and he was doing terribly at school. He was put on antidepressants to level him out. And today, 8 years later, he's now 24 years old, never had work, never made any money, and still on antidepressants. His hands shake when he's not on them. He has gone through so many years of having his emotional reactions chemically altered that he is now so fragile to touch that the slightest gust of wind would break him. And what's worse, whatever depression he had when he was 16, it persists now. He has not improved. He no longer sees psychologists. He's been deferred to a chemical treatment because, like I said before, it's extremely expensive to see a psychologist. It's invasive. It's hard to do. And how sad is it that then you are just deferred to some sort of emotional chemical castration? Treatment is the wrong word. Antidepressants are not treatment. It's like saying that going on general anesthetic is treatment for a broken arm. The antidepressant doesn't fix anything. They are simply a means to allow therapy a better chance of success. Say you were a therapist and you were trying to understand the complex, the depression, trying for your patient to understand the complex or depression, it makes things much more streamlined if that person is not manic or hyper. Makes it easier. But it is not in itself a treatment. And what I'm very afraid is that in our cultures, I can't speak for the East, but certainly in the West, in Europe and Australia, antidepressants are looked at as a treatment. So many teenagers here in Sweden are on antidepressant drugs. And somehow people have gotten it into their mind that because the child was diagnosed with ADHD, an antidepressant is the right thing so they can concentrate at school, or whatever fucking nonsense is being offered like that. So with all this being said, if this is the case, if antidepressants fix nothing, then how do we understand this with the additional information that more people than ever have described to antidepressants, and year on year, we record more suicides than the last? Now, this is a much bigger philosophical question, which I would certainly very much like to tackle, actually. I don't think I'll be doing it in the Nassim Taleb podcast, but there is a sickening curiousness for the fact that the most equal, prosperous, easiest countries in the world to live in, Northern Europe, Australia, also have the highest suicide rates. But in this particular case, I want to make the comment that is it too much of a leap for me to suggest a correlation between the two? More people on antidepressants than ever before, and more suicides than ever before. Now, I am a student of Taleb, so I understand not to just draw causation between two correlations. There could be many things that explain the connection between the two. But for the sake of a hypothesis and for the sake of the chat, I'm going to assume that there is a connection between the amount of people on antidepressants and the increasing suicide rate year on year. Does depriving someone the difficulty of managing extreme swings down, then followed by extreme swings up, make a depression worse? Most people who harm themselves do so when they are either on antidepressants or have failed to miss a dose. That is an inescapable fact about suicide. Most of the people are on some form of antidepressant medication. Take my example of the anesthetic treating a broken arm. What if this was how you treated the arm? Well, what happens when you get off the anesthetic? Your arm is significantly worse than it was before. Your arm hurts more. It's lost most of its functionality. By never actually healing the arm, it is now so mangled by the process that healing is now 100 times harder. At this point, it almost makes more sense to just permanently mask the symptoms than deal with it. Because your arm is now quite useless. Your potential is so stifled by your bad arm. Just think about that exact example for antidepressants. What if you spend years leveled out, chemically leveled out, masking your symptoms of depression and anxiety, just forcing it to the back of the mind? You're not curing anything. You get down, you can reliably pop a pill, and then feel fine again. But what kind of a fine do you actually feel? How much do you lose touch with your base character, your personality? How much do you inhibit your experience and your potential for life? Because life is the duality of inexorable opposites. So much of the beauty of life is lived at the tail ends, at the very worst moments and then at the very best moments. And you can only have the extreme highs when they are counterbalanced by the extreme lows. And if you exist in this constant state of medium, a chemically induced state of medium, you're taking away the experience to juggle between the two, to wrestle between the two, to be ecstatically happy or depressingly sad. Mental illnesses are tragic. They're extremely difficult to deal with. And so, for some reason, so sad within our culture, we have decided to medicate into obscurity the very people who might have otherwise been the most brilliant. It is a disgusting part of our culture that antidepressants are almost, people almost know how bad they are inherently. We instinctually know. But we also know that it's not that aesthetic to see a hypermanic person having a fit. And so we just want to medicate them into obscurity. Forget about them. Just turn a blind eye. Pretend like they're not around. This could somehow explain that as a cultural feeling. This could explain why we aren't making a bigger deal over the fact that so many of our children are on antidepressant medications. And the problem gets worse. You get to a stage where it is unthinkable to live without the antidepressants, because you have not been undergoing the interactions of up and down in a natural manner that a psychologically healthy person would deal with every day. You chemically induce your ups when you go down. It's all manufactured. It destroys the character. You become fragile. You become victim to break at the slightest touch. And how does society treat people that are extremely fragile? It constantly makes concessions to them. How does this make a person feel? Knowing that someone is not saying everything they could because they know it could break them. Just because you're depressed or on antidepressants, it doesn't lower your cognitive capacity. You can still be a smart, insightful person. But you're fragile. And this becomes manifest when you speak to the people closest to you who know that you might be on these antidepressants. My conversations with this guy very close to me, they have an extremely low ceiling. I cannot ask him about his ambitions for life out of fear that this would bring him down and put him into a depression and freak him out and cause an anxiety attack. Me simply asking, mate, do you wish you didn't have to take these pills? A question that does have extreme depths, but nonetheless, not a difficult question to answer. But I know, and I've been told, you can't really ask these sort of things, because it will break him. And my reaction is just, that's so sad. That level of fragility has overcome this person, who has all the potential in the world, who still has all the potential in the world. But by being on antidepressants for 8 years, it's made it 1,000 times harder to realize that potential. I want to ask him about what he thinks about his life, whether he wants to create a family, whether he's interested in the outside world. But all of these questions have the undertone of, you've been depressed for so long and it somehow makes you different. And because he knows that that's the undertone to the question, he's completely fragile to it. And therefore you can't ask it. And therefore you exist, much like the antidepressants, you exist in the medium, in the leveled out, in the no conflict zone, in the nothing curious zone. You exist in the middle, and life is lived at the edges. And that middle is just so depressing. The antidepressants have masked for so long a severity of emotional responses that he is now so weak to the slightest offset of perfect medium. 8 years of antidepressants have rendered him incapable of dealing with his questions, because whenever they are broached in his mind, it starts making him feel bad. And he knows it's only 1 hour until he needs to take his pills. So therefore, this cornerstone of antifragility is never, ever met. In 8 years, he hasn't allowed himself to get really down. And with this person in particular, like I said, it's an individual contextual basis if you're going to talk about mental health. It's true that this person did meet the threshold for antidepressants, which means threatening self-harm. That's the threshold. Then antidepressants are a necessary intervention. But where was the monitoring? Where was the supervision to make sure that it never weaned into an addiction, into a reliance? Small stresses over and over and over, and you improve steadily and steadily. This is anti-fragile. It improves you. Take on the burden. Take on the risk. Take on the sadness. Battle. Wrestle with the sadness. Go down. Go deep. And then come back up on the other side, stronger. If you shield yourself to all stresses in life, if your family accommodates you so you don't experience any physical stress, and then your doctor accommodates you with antidepressants so you don't feel any psychological stress, then you are only serving to become weaker and weaker. And the daily stresses of life, dealing with your ups and your downs, and so the path back only becomes harder and harder. I used to have a roommate who suffered terrible PTSD, and he, for a long time, was using antidepressants, both through the subscription pill form as well as through a high consumption of weed. Now, this is a remarkable guy. What he went through was so traumatic that you can imagine perhaps his threshold for disorder was met, and so antidepressants were administered. They needed to be administered. But after some years on these pills, he came off them, and I saw a transformation in this guy. And yes, he was and is still guarded to some things, and still terribly fragile to some things, and he still smokes a lot. But he is a remarkable individual, having come out on the other side of it, and he is so much more charismatic, so much stronger, so much more interesting, so much more ambitious. Via negativa, the removal of these antidepressants was the addition. He did the courageous thing, and he made the active decision to fight his PTSD in his head, rather than masking his symptoms through pills. The consumption of an antidepressant masks your problem and offers no path to antifragility. Mood swings are a natural part of the human condition. If someone is truly suicidal, then yes, antidepressant intervention is needed, because you never want to exceed the stressor threshold. But for everyone else who in modernity are offered so few barriers to continual consumption, antidepressants make you weaker and more fragile to disorder, which ultimately manifests itself through self-harm or failure in life. And Taleb writes, "The ability to wrestle with our dark side is part of life and great inspiration for creation and purpose." So for those of you listening who do have an intimate relationship with people suffering from depression, addicted to antidepressants, which these days unfortunately is most of us, I implore you to try and frame in your own mind the sickness of antidepressants for what it is. It is inhumane to emotionally, chemically castrate a child because they are a lot to handle. I was a lot to handle. My brother was a ridiculous amount to handle. And we both now, as adults, have a very high threshold to emotional disorder. We can take on very heavy emotional burdens. This is because we've had many years of hating ourselves, embarrassing ourselves, going from super high to super low. And I know the antidepressant question was presented to my parents for my brother, and thank God they never took it. Life is worth living because of its highs, and those highs are only achievable because there exist such lows. Life is a duality of inexorable opposites. Black, white, yin, yang, good, evil. This is the narrative of humanity. We exist between these opposites. It is wrong and cruel to administer a chemical that stifles your ability to experience that ride. Therefore, it should only be considered should the threshold disorder be met. Antidepressants should only be considered should the threshold disorder be met. But before it is met, we must do the much harder thing and endure a hyperactive person to try and understand and discipline and tolerate wild children. But okay, I've just caught myself. I seem to have teetered perhaps a little bit deeper than I had intended. And so before I finish, let me quickly summarize and also reiterate the point I made earlier. How to treat mental illness is an extraordinarily nuanced and contextual debate. Issues of mental health should always be dealt with at the individual level. And I fear most parents don't understand what they're doing when they agree to have their children medicated. This person close to me who has taken these pills going on 8 years now has had his development extremely stifled. It's as if his emotional maturity has stood still. His family couldn't afford therapy for all this time. So eventually a point came where he was just relegated to taking pills. Hopefully he can live a normal life with a lifelong addiction to chemical alterations. it is really so tragic, and he is now so hopelessly weak. But it all starts in the head, and since his head has been on standby for so long, it seems that his life has been too. And I totally attribute this to the presence of antidepressants in his life. But he has the potential to come back, and I can see it in him. And through painfully slow and frustrating conversations and processes, I think that this guy is starting to take on more responsibilities, starting to take a wider interest in the world. And I can see a path off the antidepressants. Because people medicate themselves all the time. Booze and weed are the most common that I've found, because these will allow you to offset how you truly feel. You can reliably switch your mood if you take these things. And not like you'll go from happy to sad, but you'll just go from sad to nothing. And anyone who knows a real booze hound or someone, or, you know, a real stoner, someone who's smoking every day as soon as they get home from work, you can see this. And you know if you know. It's like, oh, it's after dinner. Well, I guess this guy's checked out for the day. He'll be around us. He'll be talking to us. But it's leveled. So booze and weed are the most common. But the courageous act and the enduring act is to tackle your mood with your head. Tackle the stressor and become anti-fragile. Improve from disorder. Don't run away or mask the pain. Overcome it and defeat it. Shoulder your burden and orientate yourself down a path which realizes your potential. Avoid antidepressants if you can, and try intervene in the lives of those you love. Improve from disorder, become antifragile. Whenever someone tries to make the point that antidepressants is a treatment for mental illnesses, come back at them with whether a general anesthetic is a good treatment for a broken arm. Okay, Nassim, are you there? Do I have your attention? Maybe one of you know him. Please, we need to get this message to Nassim. I want to read Antifragile. Take a risk. Put an Australian voice on the inserto. On Audible right now, there is only an Italiano version. Put the English version up there and have me read the book. Nassim, I would relish the chance to read Antifragile. I hope it is clear to you how influential your work has been on my life. And hopefully you are willing to take a risk. I'm not sure. Maybe you're not that risk prone. I suppose maybe it's part of the barbell strategy. Put me at the high risk end, mate. It's an asymmetrical upside. I'm going to read you this bloody book. I mean, it's not going to cost you a lot. I would happily do it. It's going to require very little effort on your end, but it would mean a lot to me. And so, also, I have not really been plugging my work at all, and since this podcast is all of a sudden getting significant downloads, I actually want to make a little bit of use of this space. So I write quite a bit. I run an SEO agency, and I record interviews. Everything is found in the podcast description. So subscribe to my newsletter. That's the best thing you can do for me. And of course, pump your good juice into the algorithm. Rate the podcast 5 stars. And leave a shiny review. And thank you all. I know this was a bit of a heavy episode, but it's something that's been swimming around in my head for a while. And if you have thoughts or comments or disagreements, send them over my way in the email. And I am very ready to make redactions if there are factual incorrections in here. Because I'm not a doctor, not a psychologist. I'm just a guy that likes Nassim Taleb. So, ciao.